We are holding on Nunheyo Mal'a 6th line. And line against Mal. We're in the middle of discussing, the Mishnah had mentioned that they asked the Chachamim in Rome if Hashem hates the Redazara, why doesn't he destroy it? And that led us into some discussion about the whole thing of why Hashem doesn't destroy Avodah altogether, or why he doesn't destroy only some of them, and why we find, for example, that you might have, there's a fire breaks out, and the Avodah temple remains intact, whereas everything else is destroyed, because, like, so to speak, Hashem is fighting against the living who worship Avodah rather than the dead beat, rather than the dead Avodah itself. And the last thing we said was we have a pasuk actually expressing the idea that Hashem is not going to start destroying things just because people worship them, because otherwise he'd have to destroy all kinds of things that the world needs, including even people, because there are people who are worshipped by other people. Hello? Oh, welcome back. It's true. Okay, so now this is where we're holding. Nunheya Mar'al, 6th line. No, says Mason, what's that got to do with anything? No, so Aaron's point. No. Yeah.
Okay. It's better than the opposite.
All right.
What opposite?
Okay, new. So, Shaul Agrippa Sarsova Shavim Gamliel. Agrippa, the general, asked Shavim Gamliel. Rashi says that actually this person's name, or his own personal name was Agrippa. Rashi says he is actually in the time of Agrippa Samelach, the king of Eretz Yisrael, a few years before the Churban. So he himself was a goy, but so he asked Shavim Gamliel. And he says, it says in your Torah, your God is a consuming fire, a jealous God.
Okay, just listen on this line.
Yep, go right ahead.
Okay.
So Agrippa, the general, asked Rav Gamliel, "Ksiv b'Torah, and it says in your Torah, 'Ki Hashem alakecha ish oichlahu keokana,' your God is consuming fire, a jealous God." Now, the philosopher who asked Rav Gamliel in the Gemara at the bottom of Nun Dalet on the base, he understood that the word that Marsha explained. He understood that the word "kana" over there doesn't mean jealous; it means angry. That Hashem is angry at, and then the question was, yes, and the question was why that person's question was why is Hashem angry at the ones who worship it rather than at the Avodah Zarah itself. This person, this Agrippa, the general, misunderstood further. He thought that the word "kana" over here literally means jealous, and it was like Hashem is sort of big jealous of the honor given to Avodah Zarah. So you have to ask, who is the person jealous of? Somebody who's on the same, who's of the same caliber as him. One wise person, for example, is jealous of another one. One strong man is jealous of another one. A rich person is jealous of another rich person. If we're saying Hashem is jealous of the Avodah Zarah, what does that imply? Does it imply they're somehow comparable? Chas v'shalom. Amalai, so Rav Gamliel tells him, no. No, you're misunderstanding the meaning of the word kana. Again, it doesn't mean jealous. It means zealous. It means angry. So I will give you a mashal. What is it like? Like a man who has one wife and then he marries a second wife. So if the second wife is more important than the first one, the first wife is not going to be so angry at her husband. Okay, you know, he wanted to marry somebody of a higher caliber. So she can understand that. She may not like it, but she'll accept it. But if the second wife is on a lesser level than the first one, then she hates her husband for it. And not only she's jealous of her rival, but more to the point is she's angry at her husband. Why are you going and marrying down and marrying her instead? So the same way, in other words, Hashem is not, we're not saying Hashem is jealous of the idols. What we're saying is Hashem is angry at people who have Hashem available to worship, and yet they go and substitute for him or include together with him or whatever lesser beings, which are the various other desires.
I don't think women today would be okay with either
shidduch. That, well, with that, the same thing, but yeah. All right. Another one. Amalei Zunin L'Rav Akiva. Zunin says to Rav Akiva, so who is Zunin? Rashi says he was a Jew. Marsha says, okay, Rashi had the Kabbalah that he was a Jew, then fine, we have to accept that. Otherwise, Marsha says it seems more logical based on the way he phrases it to say that actually he was a goy. But he, according to Marsha, he was actually a goy who on the outwardly worships Avodah Zarah, because that was the thing to do in those days. But he knew, and as he knew very well that it really has no meaning to it.
why did he do it?
Well, so he did it because to fit into society or whatever. But he's not a yid. He doesn't have peer pressure. He doesn't have to go. He's a goy. He doesn't have to go on a sit of nefesh.
Nancy Reagan never told him just say
no. Come on. Okay, so he says, "Libi v'libcha yada davar chachavim less from a shasha." My heart and your heart knows very well that Avodah Zarah has no reality to it. However, I have a question. We see that people go to a temple of Avodah Zarah, and they're broken. They have broken legs, for example, or not a broken leg specifically. Rashi says, they're sick, and like their whole body is falling apart.
The people who go.
The Osu Kimitsambi, and then they come out of there, and they're whole, and they feel much better. Nowadays, you have these Catholic shrines and whatever, where people, cripples, come there, and supposedly they come out cured and whatever. Yeah. So how does that work? Because if Avodah Zarah has no Messias, then how does such a thing work?
Who asked that?
This is Zunin asked Rabbi Akiva. So again, according to Rashi, Zunin is a Yid, and he's asking Rabbi Akiva, I understand that Avodah Zarah is meaningless. Auger Forest, how do we explain this? According to Maharsho, he's a guy, and he's saying, Let me give you a mashal. Picture you have a very trustworthy person living in a certain city. Everybody trusts him so much that people from all over the city will come to deposit things with him for safekeeping without requiring aiding, because they know they can trust him, they'll get it back. Now, one time it happens that there's one person who doesn't do that. Every time he brings him up the kaddin, he's always careful to have Aidim, because he doesn't trust him. One time this particular person forgets, and then forgets to bring Aidim, and he still deposits his thing. So the Shomer's wife says to him, well, now we have our opportunity. Let's go next when he comes. No, when he comes back, let's deny that we ever received it. After all, he doesn't have any aidim, unlike always, so therefore we can get away with it. Allah, so the husband says to her, because this fool acted improperly, that he didn't bring aidim, even though he should have, even though he usually does. Should we therefore damage our credibility? Like this, it's true. So what
I said,
the Shomer's wife, the Shomer, this guy who's very strong. So that's the marshal, that just because you have the opportunity doesn't mean you should take it. You still have to be trustworthy. You still have to keep your reputation. Ask kach yisurim. So Rabbi Akiva says the same thing is true as far as yisurim, as far as sicknesses and other problems that a person has. When they are sent to a person by the Beis Din Shamayla, those Yisurim are made to swear. The Yisurim are personified. We find also in the Gemara in Bava Metzia, where Rav Elazar ben Rav Shimon speaks to Yisurim and tells them to go away in the morning, say some Lun Torah, and come back in the evening. So, yeah. So the Yisurim, B'shosh M'shagrin Oysen La'adam, when they're sent to the person, M'shbiyin Oysen, they're made to swear, Shaloi Telcho El B'yayim Klaini, you should only go and hit the person on a certain date, V'loi Teisu El B'yayim Klaini Yavashah Klaini, and when you leave, it should only be on a certain day and at a certain time, V'yaday Klaini, V'yaday Sam Klaini, and it should be through the agency of this person, this particular doctor, and through such and such a medicine. So what happens now? So they swore to that effect. They're going to leave at such and such a time, and now, obviously, what you can have is, now Shah says, I mean, the fact is, you can obviously have Shuvot Filo Tzedakah, Mavir Nesroi Agzera, so obviously it can be removed ahead of time. We're not talking about that. But the point is, if there's none of the above, and it's supposed to be leaving at a certain time, through a certain, and it's supposed to be a certain doctor will give a certain cure, what happens? Kivashi Giyaz Manan Lothes, now when it comes time for the Yisurim to leave the person, Holach Zelabes Avodah Tzachavim, so now this person goes to a temple of Avodah Zarah. Which Marsha says, by the way, it may not just be an accidental thing, as the Gemara is going to say soon, the Gemara is going to talk about that sometimes Hashem makes it, like sort of purposely mislead the goyim to do the wrong thing, as we'll discuss soon. So therefore, free choice, right, but the point is, so therefore this person gets the idea in his head, punked at the time when it was already, when previously the Yisurim had been told, this is your deadline, this is when you're supposed to be leaving, punked, Hashem puts it into the guy's head that he should think of going to a Beis Avodah Zarah, and instead of,
why just at that time?
Because that's the point, in other words, so what happens? Because this way he can be misled. So he goes to the Beis Avodah Zarah. Well, that's what we're going to discuss soon. Wait.
Omru Yisurin, so now the Yisurin say to themselves, Zinu Shaloi Nese. By rights, we shouldn't be going out now. By rights, we should be sticking around because he's going to the Beit HaMikdash. And in fact, Maharsha adds also a nuance that when they say, Loi Teisu Ela B'Yom Tzoini, Rasha Tzoinis, etc., doesn't actually mean that's the deadline. It means that's just the opposite. It means the Yisurim are being told that's the earliest you can leave. So they can say, we have every right to stay on. We won't even be breaking our Shavua if we do. But the Chosin Va'omer, but then the Yisurim say, Mechimitnesha Shoshes also Shalai Kahogan, because this foolish person did improperly, because he listened to his Yetzahara, he had that idea get into his brain that he should go to the base of a Desara, and he went ahead with it, rather than realizing that that's foolishness and he shouldn't. Onu Na'abed Shavuasenu, should we go and violate our trust, our Shavua? Okay, it wouldn't technically be violating the Shavua, but still it would show a lack of trustworthiness. Like we're staying around beyond the time that we were told, even though technically fine, we have an excuse, but nevertheless, it's still, yeah.
Well, also, isn't there also a way you can read it that is exactly when they're supposed to leave?
So Maharsha learns not. Maharsha learns that the vote is, because otherwise, they obviously are not going to break their shavur. There's no half, they're going to break their shavur. Maharsha's point is that even they could argue technically it's not breaking the shavur, because the shavur was never meant to be that this is the deadline, this is just the earliest they can leave, but yeah. V'hainu d'amr Rav Yechanan, and this also fits with what Rav Yechanan says. May d'chtib b'chaloyim royim b'nei monim. What does it mean in the Tochacha when sicknesses are described as royim, bad, v'nei monim and trustworthy? What do we mean by that? Royim b'shlichusan v'nei monim b'shuasan. It means they're bad as far as their shlichus. They're sent to do bad to the body. And Maharsha says also, l'fi d'arkoi, Maharsha continues with this verse, they're bad in the sense that they have the ability to leave the person at this point. Because after all, they, and yet they're saying, we really, by rights, should be staying. So they're royim, and they would like to be able to stay and hurt him more, but they don't want to lose their trustworthiness. And they're faithful to their shvua, that after all, they do leave exactly when they're supposed to. So therefore, so that's Rabbi Akiva's point, in other words, that just because the person ended up doing something improper, nevertheless, it was still determined to begin with as how long he's going to be sick and when he's going to be cured and by what and by what medicines and whatever. So if he then chooses to do the wrong thing and go to the temple of the Avodah Zarah at that time, that's his problem. That's the Yisurim still are going to fulfill what they're told to do.
Because they made a Shavua.
And because, like Maharsha says, even if theoretically they could argue, nevertheless, it's not really technically violating our Shavua to stay, nevertheless, they still would show a lack of trustworthiness.
Even at the risk of making...
Even at the risk of...
appearing...
Well, so that's the next piece. I think I'm always going to say, wait. Omale Rava Bar Rav Yitzchak Rav Yehuda. So now Rava Bar Rav Yitzchak asks Rav Yehuda as follows. How about another case? Ha'ika Beis Avodah Sechavim Ba'Astrian. There is, we find, there's a temple of Avodah Zarah in my area where I live. D'chi Mitzrich Alma L'Mitzrich. Now what happens when the world needs rain, when there's a drought? Mitzchazi Lehu B'Chalma. This Avodah Zarah appears to the people who worship it in a dream. And the Avodah Zarah tells them, Shach Li Gavra, Shech the person, bring a human sacrifice to me, the Icy Mitra, and I will cause rain to fall. And sure enough, Shach Li Gavra, and sure enough, the worshippers go and do a human sacrifice to this god of rain, the Icy Mitra, and rain comes. How do we explain that? Yes, how do we explain that? Amalei, so Rav Yehuda said, Hashli, you know what, it's a very good thing you asked. Hashka, I have a shchivna. You should know, if I had passed away before I had the chance to tell you, I would not have had a chance to tell you this verse, the Amar Rav, that Rav said, in other words, the verse is sort of like, Rav had only told this to Rav Yehuda. So therefore, if Rav Yehuda had had, if Rav Bar Rav Yitzchak had not thought to ask of it, then it would have, Rav Yehuda would have taken this statement that we're going to say now to his grave, and nobody would ever know it. Like this. Bashkacha Prophet, he was asked, and therefore he has a chance to tell it to us, and therefore it gets recorded in the Gemara. What is the verse? The Amarad, my dichtiv ashecholak Hashem alekecha oisam lachol ha'amim. What does it mean? The prophet described in Tarshish Vashkana, and Moshe warns, don't worship the sun and the moon and the other planets and whatnot, which Hashem cholak them to all the nations. Now the simple meaning of cholak means that Hashem apportioned them, like Hashem portioned them out that the simple meaning is, in other words, that it means that they're portioned out, that they should give light to the world. But on the other hand, among other things, that it's not l'chol ha'amim, it's not only to the nations, it's to the Jewish people as well. We also get light and energy and whatever from the sun and the moon. So therefore, another understanding of Asher cholak is cholak, not meloshin apportioning, but meloshin cholak slippery. Melamet shech likon b'dvarim. This teaches us that Hashem makes it for them
slippery with words, in other words, Hashem for the goyim, that he makes it possible for them to be misled, in order to destroy them from the world. In other words, this kind of thing that you see, that there is this deity, that they sacrifice to it and rain falls, and the people who worship it think, therefore, well, obviously it must be that that deity is powerful and it has the ability to bring rain. No, the reason why Hashem makes it happen that way is in order to allow them to be misled. This way they can take them out of the world, in other words, that they can get their due punishment. Because Hashem makes it possible for them to be misled, but on the other hand, they can not be misled. When the Avodah Zarah comes to them in the dream and says, bring me this human sacrifice, they have the ability. Never mind the neshama, they still can recognize the truth. They still are able. Avraham Avinu was able to recognize
it. The only miracles were by the Jewish people. Everybody would convert.
They may not have an neshama kiss, but they still have the ability to realize that Sephardana got up and belt, that Hashem runs the world and not their various deities, and therefore they may be very confused. And in fact, now, so you have Rashi just says over here, manichon lisa. Rashi says over here, he allows them to get misled. Tosfos earlier in the Masechta talks about specifically, for example, we find that sometimes there are things that are accomplished through Shadim or other such things. We had earlier in the Masechta, for example, a Talmud of Yoshka being healing people through mentioning Yoshka's name and whatever. So some of the Mepharshim understand our Gemara over here as being that Hashem makes it a misleading thing. Hashem makes it, for example, not necessarily B'derech HaTeva would it have had to rain right now, but Hashem makes it rain anyway, even though B'derech HaTeva maybe not, in order to mislead them. The Maharal actually says specifically not. Rashi actually brings it on the Pesach also. Rashi brings it on the Pesach, brings this idea that the verse says that Hashem purposely misleads them. Maharal says, no, it's one thing for Hashem to purposely mislead a nation when they're about to be destroyed. We find, for example, the famous thing how Baal Tzfoim, the one idol of Mitzrayim, was left over in order to mislead them that they can chase the Jewish people into the Yom Tov. But here we're talking about it on an ongoing basis. No, it's not necessarily misleading them. It's the Derech HaTeva, it's going to be raining now. And therefore, Hashem, like we said yesterday, Olam Kimin Hogin Noyeg, Hashem allows the world to follow its natural pattern. The Derech HaTeva, it has to rain now. The fact that they're able to attribute it to Avodah Zarah is that okay? Hashem gave them the chiruch chopshes. Hashem is not going to interfere. It is the chiruch chopshes because they have the ability to realize to themselves that the rain does not depend on their appeasing the Avodah Zarah. That the rain is either something that either they can think of it as something that happened to B'derech HaTeva, or they can realize that Hashem runs it and not the Avodah Zarah. And after all, I mean, once in a while you see this kind of thing. It's not a regular basis. You actually have Sukkim. You actually have Sukkim in Yirmiyah and some of the other Nevi'im that make the point that you can't rely on the Avodah Zarah for rain. Once in a while, yeah, it happens that you...
Sometimes they should realize all the time. You tell them that there's one God, and they're very, very, very confused. They're very, very confused. They don't understand
what they're saying. But they have to be able to understand it. It is the Sheva Mitzvah Bnei Noach is that they have to not.
We have to tell them.
No, fine. But in other words, so that's the point. We tell them, and they have to be accepting it. So therefore, if they don't accept it, if they continue to believe in their deities, we're saying that's their problem. Behainu de Amr Ishlo. Yes.
They are taught by us.
You had Jewish people all over the world in that time teaching them that these kinds of things are wrong. They ignore it.
So Hashem made it. They themselves are expected.
The natural thing for a person should be to understand that there is one Hashem who runs the world. It's not just Avraham was able to do it. Anybody in principle can do it.
On their own.
They're expected to be able to be able to realize that, and therefore, if they go and follow the Avodah Zarah, especially on top of that, when they have us Jewish people telling us otherwise.
Can I put in my two cents?
Yes.
I think that when you say Becher Chavshit, you're talking about if we're the only ones that get miracles, then there's not get, like the Malachim, they don't have the spirit.
Well, that is true. And you have the prophet.
They have to mislead people. Even Jews get misled. Like Jews sometimes will walk into an base of Avodah Zarah and they'll be healed. And if it was only you're going into a synagogue and something good happening,
There would be no.
Well, there is
free
that,
choice,
dude, and you have a
pulse.
And you have a pulse. So that is. No.
If you could see everything that happens when you daven, you would have.
Stop. One second. The fact is, what Aaron is saying is stated in a pulse in Parashas Re'eh, where it talks over there about a Navi Shekher who tries to convince people to worship Avodah Zarah, and it's possible that he may actually be able to perform Nisim. Yeah. How does that come about? Hashem is testing you to see, are you going to follow Hashem or are you going to be misled into Avodah Zarah? So here it's a similar... No. He was talking about that person who's trying to convince you to worship Avodah Zarah. Once he says he's coming to tell you to worship Avodah Zarah, doesn't matter whether he's a goy or a yid. Once he tells you he's coming to in the name of Avodah Zarah, you should know automatically he's false. And even
we're talking about a goy.
So here we're talking about goyim, but the point is the goyim. Okay, but the point still remains the same kind of thing as with the yidin. You can have a navi come to them and moves heaven and earth and says that he's doing it in the name of Avodah Zarah, and we still have to realize that he's false. The same way the goyim have to realize, even if they have their God coming to them in a dream and telling them that he will bring rain as long as they do such and such a ritual, they are expected to understand that that is false and that's not the case. And the fact that it's not like that, the fact that rain does fall under such circumstances, is that Hashem makes it possible for them to be misled in order to destroy them from the world. In other words, they have the choice, they have the chiruch hapshis after all, to realize that there's one Hashem and that all of this is nonsense. And if they don't, that's their problem. By the way, this is one of the psukim, by the way.
I think that it's true to a certain extent. I think that Hashem does mislead them, but the way they can correct their way is by us intervening and telling them that Hashem is
that doesn't change the fact that they have that responsibility to be led by us.
Fine, let's say the responsibility.
They have the tools to understand. What do you mean? Do they have the tools? We could sit and talk about this all day, but we have Gemara for a little bit. The fact of the matter is, the Gemara is saying that the fact of the matter is that they have the ability to do differently, and they don't, and therefore they deserve punishment for that.
He doesn't say that they have the ability.
They have the ability. Rashi says, he makes it possible for them to be misled. In other words, if they then choose to be misled, that is their problem. That's what we're saying.
They're not such good people.
And by the way, this pasuk, Hashem Elokecha Hashem Amim, is one of the psukim that the Targum, when they made the Targum Hashivim, the Chachamim, when they translated the Torah, it's one of the psukim they had to change the wording of slightly in the translation. They had to change it to Hashem Elokecha Lahoir L'chol Amim, to give light to all the nations in order that the goyim shouldn't be misled, in order that the goyim who read this translation shouldn't be misled into thinking, okay, Hashem sanctions us to worship the stars. Yeah. Behind the drama, so this is what
that shows that
they could be misled, but they have the responsibility not to be misled.
That shows that if you change exactly that word to another word, they are completely misled.
It means that if they had translated exactly as said, then the Goyim could mistakenly think that the Torah sanctions it. Therefore, the Chachamim changed the wording in order that they should not be misled. If, nevertheless, they continue to worship the sun and so forth and claim that they're supposed to be doing that, then they're wrong. They're allowing themselves to be misled, and they deserve their punishment. Behind the Amr Rish Lakish, and this is like what Rish Lakish says, "My dechid im aleitim hu yolit v'lam novim yisim chayin." What does it mean in the pasuk? If for the scoffers, for the people who scorn the truth, then he will scorn also, Hashem. But for the humble ones, he'll give grace. It means, if a person comes to the Tame, it's talking about in general. A person comes to the Tame himself, Hashem opens up the door and makes it possible for him to walk through it. Hashem doesn't help him, but he does open the door and makes it available. But if a person comes to the Tame, then Hashem helps him. So therefore, what we're saying, in other words, that so Hashem makes it possible for them to be misled by making it that in this case rain will fall, even though on the face of it they can then attribute it to their Avodah Zarah.
And they do.
But that's their problem. That's not Hashem's problem, is basically what we're saying. It's a chiruch hapshis. That's what it boils down to.
Where is the student of Yashka? What page?
No, I'm back on Chavdayan. Chavdayan, I'm very
sorry.
Is it a
coast?
A goy talk about considered has less bechira chavshis than a Jew because I call b'shvo Yisrael, because Hashem created the world for the sake of the Jewish people, and therefore the goyim are in that sense sort of like the background. But nevertheless, they still have a certain degree of bechira, and that's what we're saying over here. Because the Torah and the Olam, the goyim will choose the wrong thing. And they have bechira, yeah. Over here, Shani Minister Marshall. Okay, Shani.
They have bechira. The question is, do they have the understanding to act upon the bechira? And I don't think
they have the understanding.
And they have
they have enough to be able to not worship the Avodah Zarah and not to be doing human sacrifices there.
But they're doing
because they allow themselves to be misled, because they follow what they've learned, and they don't think to learn differently. They don't use their.
If you were tied up by these goyim and you were about to do the human sacrifice, you'd be caught in different ways.
Okay. Let's go on. We've got ground to cover over here. we're also three black behind. So come on. All right.
From here on, for the next
20 block, we're going to be dealing with all the ins and outs of Yayin Netzach. We talked about it before in the Masechta, briefly, but now we're going to get into more of the details, such as how does wine become Yayin Netzach? At what point does it become? At what point is it considered wine? What are the dinim? Because now we're finished with the dinim of Avodah Zarah, so now we have to
complete the.
No, because before we talk about things that we buy from goyim that are also. So now, Yayin Netzach is a topic enough of itself to deserve its own place in the Masechta. Okay. So the Mishnah says, Loichin gas ba'utim and oiv tichav. And you're allowed to buy a trodden press full of wine from Avodah Zarah. Now, the way they worked it in those days was basically like this. So you had a wine press consisted of two major parts. You have the top part, which is called the gas, which is, it's built on a slope. So that's you press the grapes in it, and the wine will run down it. Then you have a channel or a pipe or something that leads down into a lower pit. The wine and the grape juice rather ends up going.
Now you're at ground level.
Yeah, let's say it doesn't have to all be. It doesn't have to be at ground level. It could be built above ground level. Whatever. The point is that
once you get to the pit, you're in ground.
Not necessarily. The pit could be also. It could be a large container. Whatever. That's not the point. So the top part is called the gas. The bottom part is called the burr, and yes, usually it would be built in the ground. It didn't necessarily have to be. And as she said, if it was built in the ground, then they would also sometimes they would plaster it. They would coat it with plaster so none of the wine leaks out. So as she mentioned, when we say about Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus and Pirkei Avos, when Rabbi Eliezer ben Zakkai says on him, burr stood chain in Ahmed Tippi, it's like a plastered burr that doesn't lose a drop. That's the kind of burr we're talking about. Anyway, the point is, so you'd have, again, the juice flows down from the gas, which is built at an angle, flows down through the channel or the pipe or whatever into the burr. In the burr over there, you have, later on we'll see in the Gemara, you put some kind of filter there where the juice is entering the burr in order to trap as much as possible of the bits of seeds and then grape skins and then
filter
grape... So it's a filter you put in there, like you put in a basket over there,
right.
A gargusni, the Gemara calls it later. And you put that filter in there. The wine goes into the burr. Nevertheless, you still have a lot of solids in there. So eventually they float to the top and you skim them off. Eventually, once the wine has settled and fermented or whatever in the burr, then you take it out of there, you ladle it out of there or whatever and put it in the barrel. Once they're in the barrels, again, you skim off whatever rises to the top, and then you seal them up and you sell them. That's the gist of the process. So the Mishnah says, you're allowed to buy a gas, the contents of a gas, where a goy has pressed it, where a goy has already walked on it and started pressing out the juice. Even if the goy afterwards is taking some of the grape from the gas over there that were already trodden on and therefore already have juice coming out of them, and put... What? The gas itself is not a funnel. The gas itself is a place where you tread the grapes. That is, it's built on an angle so all the juice will collect into one place and eventually flow down into the burr.
Right.
But the main point is the gas is where the actual treading of the grapes takes
right.
place.
Well, so it's kind of funnel-like a little bit, maybe.
No. The main point is, though, that what the Mishnah is saying, and we'll discuss in the Gemara whether this is Alfi Alacha, that if the goy trod on the grapes in the gas, so even afterwards he's picking up some of the grapes that he already treaded on, that he already started squeezing out juice from, and he puts them back into the pile so that they can tread on them more effectively. Nevertheless, it's not considered Yayin Netzach. The Enit or Tapuach, Tapuach means like the big pile where all the grapes are. The main because on the face of it, the guy touched it. But our Tana, the Tana of our Mishnah holds, it's not considered wine until it goes down into the burr, until it reaches the bottom part of it. As long as it's in the gap, the Tana of
the burr is not inside the ground.
Well, I don't see why
that
would
make sense. I was always mentally picturing it being in
okay,
the
okay, usually it's probably right. But as long as the wine is in the top part, in the gap, then the Tana of our Mishnah holds is not yet considered wine. Therefore, it can't become Yayin Nesach. The Eine Oysa Yayin Nesach Hachiyer is Labur. So therefore, you cannot make it Yayin Nesach until it goes down into the pit, and at that point, it's able to become Yayin Nesach. Yorad Labur, once the wine goes down into the burr, and if the goy touches it, mashab burr also vashal mutter. So whatever is in the burr becomes osir. The rest is mutter. Now that would mean, when we say the rest, meaning again, you have juice flowing down from the gas into the burr. What we're saying is that if the goy touches the wine in the burr, that will become osir. The wine that's still up here in the gas, even though you have a constant flow of juice from one to the other. And that's what we're saying. Vashal mutter. The rest, meaning everything that's not yet in the burr, will be mutter.
That's why.
Well, that we have to figure. No, it's not. Well, it hasn't fermented yet. But that's not the point.
I mean,
the point is, the Tana of our Mishnah holds that as long as it's not in the burr, it's not considered wine yet. The real question is, though, we're going to see in the Gemara. The question is, they are connected after all, because you have that flow of juice between one and the other. If it touches what's on the bottom, why doesn't the stuff on top become osir? Since after all, they're connected. It's all one.
It goes from the top to the bottom, not the other way around.
No, but that's not the point.
Like
when
you still have kara, you
still have, it's called nisa. You have a column of liquid. You have a column of liquid going from one to the other. Therefore, they should be considered connected. Tosfos discusses various details over here. Among others, Tosfos brings that the Rashbam learned that we don't mean even if the goy touched the wine in the burr. What we mean is just the fact that if he pressed the wine in the gas in the upper part, and because of his pressing, it flowed down. In other words, as we're going to talk about in the Gemara, that one possibility, you have a stopper there to prevent the wine in the gas from going down to the burr. But here we're talking about so the Rashbam learns, Tosfos says, that if there's no stopper, and therefore as soon as the goy is pressing, from his koyach that's flowing down into the burr, it will in fact be also, according to our Mishnah.
Even though he didn't actually touch it.
Right. Not the stuff on the top, but the stuff on the bottom. Again, our Mishnah would hold, we still say that our Mishnah holds only what's in the burr is considered wine.
Okay.
However, since it came into the burr from his koyach, therefore the Rashbam learns that's what the Mishnah means, it will be author. Just what's in the burr.
In other words, his action is closer to the little drop of grape juice that's flowing toward the burr, but the stuff in the burr is usher, it doesn't come back through.
Right. But that's the Rashbam's explanation. Most of the other Rishonim understand it more at face value, that it means just the goy actually touches the juice that's in the burr, not just we're not talking again. Okay. Fine. Continues the Mishnah. Durchin am oiv kechav magas. You're allowed to join the goy in pressing the grapes in the gas.
Wow.
Because our Mishnah held, again, as long as it's in the gas, it's not yet wine. The important point of it is two things. First of all, it means, again, that as long as it's not in the burr, it's not considered wine, therefore it's not Yayin Nesach. Second of all, though, it also, you have it, on the face of it, you might have a different issue. You have an issue that the grapes are becoming tummy. They're becoming mukshal the kabal tumma, and they're becoming tummy, because the goy's gas is tummy. Nevertheless, that's not an issue. Now, Midrabanan he is, but we're talking about Caleb anyway. Caleb may well be Tommy, even on Zoraita level, but the point is that now the Gemara is going to discuss that you have a possibility that maybe you're not allowed to allow Cholin and Eustrol to become Tommy. However, over here, once the guy already started pressing it, then it's already Tommy anyway. And so therefore you're not adding anything to that. You're not helping him to do an Aveda, because a goy doesn't have any ither of making chulin tomei, even if we say you're not allowed to, that a yid is not allowed to. So it would mean, in other words, that once the goy starts pressing, you're allowed to join with him, and it also means, so Rashi says it means a couple of other things. It means, again, like we said, the juice that's there in the gas in the upper part is mutter even to drink. Tosfos mentions the possibility. Tosfos mentions an opinion that maybe it's also to drink, but at least it's mutter b'hana. But anyway, the point is, now you have a concept which we're going to discuss much more in the next parak. You're not allowed to have a gain from Yayin Nesach. You're not allowed to, for example, work on a job that involves handling Yain Nesach and being paid for it. But here, it's not Yain Nesach yet, because again, the Tana of our Mishnah says, according to the Tana of our Mishnah, it's not wine as long as it's in the upper pit, as long as it's in the gas. So therefore, you're good. So you're allowed to press together with the goy in the gas. The Gemara doesn't identify him, but what is Ava loy both street name, right? However, you're not allowed to harvest the grapes together with him. Now, why is that? So Rashi says, because then you are Godem Tumah. Because what's he harvesting the grapes for? Because they're going to be pressing them. Once he starts pressing them, they're going to become Tumah. So therefore, Mela pressing together with him, okay, they're already Tumah. It's already a done deal. But to harvest them with him, and therefore they're going to end up, you're doing something that is going to lead to Tumah of Kolen and Eretz Yisrael, that the Tana of our Mishnah holds, you're not allowed to do. There are other Rishonim.
They're going to become Tumah.
Eventually, they will become Tumah. There are other Rishonim. No, if we're talking about that they're going to become Tumah when they're in the press, the Midaraita, as soon as Jews start coming out of them, they'll be Moksha v'Tamal Tumah. When he collects them, the Rashi learns at this point, and at this point, they're not necessarily Moksha v'Tamal Tumah yet. There is a concept that's mentioned elsewhere in the Gemara that when you harvest intending to press them, they are Moksha v'Tamal Tumah, but Rashi learns that is only when they actually became wet at the time. For example, sometimes you have your harvest grapes to make wine, you actually take some of the juice. You have to take one of the grapes, squeeze it to see if there's enough juice in them, and therefore the grapes there get wet, and therefore they're Moksha L'Kabbal Tumah. Here we're not necessarily talking about that, but nevertheless, though, it's the first stage in a process that's going to lead to them eventually becoming Moksha L'Kabbal Tumah when they're pressed. Therefore, you're not allowed to do that. The Rambam and some other Rishonim learn that actually what it is that what we're talking about is we are talking about that Zera Drabanan, that they will become Tomei as soon as they're harvested, and therefore for that reason, again, you're not allowed to do that because you're causing Cholin and Eretz Yisrael to become Tomei. Again, the Halacha is not like on Mishnah because, as we'll see in the Gemara, there's two ways in which the Halacha is not like our Mishnah. Number one, the assumption that the wine is only considered wine when it comes into the burr. We're going to discuss that in the Gemara. And two, this concept that you're not allowed to allow Cholin in Eretz Yisrael to become Tomei, the Halacha is not like that either. The Halacha is you are allowed to make them Tomei with certain reservations, with certain conditions that we'll see soon in the Gemara. Anyway, so therefore, so again, our Mishnah is saying that you'd be allowed to press the grapes together with them, because at that point they're already Tomei, and on the other hand, it's not Yayin Nesef yet. On the other hand, you would not be allowed to harvest with him because then you're doing the first stage in a process that's going to make them Moksha L'Kabbal Tumah.
If you collected, you harvested separately.
Separately, fine. You're not allowed to harvest with him.
Can you?
So that would be the point is you're harvesting grapes that he's eventually going to put in his press. That's the point. Rashi is saying you will be also to do that. Even though it doesn't mean with him like side by side with him. Oh. This means you're harvesting grapes which he eventually is going to press and make Tumah. That's the point. You are being Gerdem Tumah to hold in an Eretz Yisrael. Continues the Mishnah. Yisrael shu oisa the Tumah. What about if the owner of the grape is not a goy, but rather a yid, but he's doing things the Tumah, and he's not allowed to do that, because a yid does have a mitzvah, or a yid does have to follow the rule, which our Tana holds, that you're not allowed to allow Cholin to become Tumah. So if this yid does that, you're not allowed to press the grape or harvest with him, because either way, you're helping him do an avera, because when it comes to the pressing is when they actually become Tomei, because that's when they actually become Moksha L'Kabbal Tumah on a Daraisa level. The harvesting we said before is leading towards that. The point is leading towards it. According to Rashi, it's not even a question of Zirabanam. It's a question of at this point, it's the first stage in a process which is going to lead to the grapes being Tomei. Rashi doesn't clarify that you have to figure out whether that's the right or the bottom. But the point is, the Tumah itself, in the first stage, the harvesting, according to Rashi, there's no Tumah at all, but it's just something that eventually is going to lead to the grapes becoming Tumah when they're pressed. Meanwhile, when they're pressed, they actually become Tumah. So therefore, so...
it becomes Tumah retroactively?
No, not retroactively, but the problem is that you helped harvest them, and therefore you made it possible for them to become Tumah. So you're not allowed to do that. So that's the point. However, you are allowed to carry empty barrels to the gas, and to bring full barrels of wine back with him, because at that point, the Tumah has already been accomplished. You're not helping them with it. Yeah,
too late.
So it's too late. Here, by the way, the halacha you see over here, the aleph over here, the halacha is like this part of the Mishnah, but not because of the reason about that you're not allowed to make cholin become tomei, but rather because when you're talking about a yid's grapes and a yid's wine, you have truma and maizah to consider. And one, and while tevel, while truma has not been taken from it, you're talking not allowed to make a tomei. Everybody agrees to that.
So when you cannot have goyish employees.
No. So the point is that if the guy, if the owner of the grapes, the guy, then there's no truma and maizah to be taken anyway.
Right.
Then the only question is, are you allowed in general for chulin in Eretz Yisrael to be allowed to become tameis or not? Since you have people in Eretz Yisrael, or at least you had in those days, who are careful to only eat tahor food, so maybe therefore you're not allowed to be tameis any food in Eretz Yisrael.
So you could not have.
So according to that. So according to that, therefore, well, practically speaking, yeah, but that's a separate matter. The point is that you're not allowed to allow cholin, if we go according to our Mishnah, that you're not allowed to allow cholin and Eretz Yisrael to become tamei. That's why you're allowed to press the grapes with the goy, because at that point they're already tamei anyway, it's too late. But you're not allowed to harvest with him because that leads to that. With a yid, you're not allowed to do either one. But again, the halacha is like that part about the yid, because the problem is not so much that they're cholin, the problem is that they're tevel, which contains truma in it. And that you're not allowed to become, you're not allowed to help make tummy. So therefore you're not allowed to press with him and you're not allowed to harvest with him.
So harvesting with him means he's standing side by side.
No, again, it doesn't have to be side by side. You're harvesting his grapes, which he's going to press the truma, and therefore you're making it possible for his grapes, which contain truma and nicer in them, to become tummy.
He's harvesting your grapes, is that also the same?
Well, if he's Tomei, then yes, you'd have to make sure he's Tomei first. If he's an Amaris, for example, you'd have to be Matahir him and watch him to make sure he doesn't become Tomei. Yes. Continues the Mishnah, in the same vein, Nachtem Shu Oitzah B'Truma, in the same vein, if you have a baker who makes his bread B'Truma, where there you have the same problem again, because the dough has to have Chala taken from it, and Chala is like Truma in that regard, it's not supposed to become Tomei. So therefore, similarly, loshen v'lo'erchinimo, you're not allowed to knead the dough or shape it together with him, because that would be helping out in the aveira. Once the water touches the flour, it becomes tomei, and the kneading and the... And
speaking of harvesting, you can do it together, but not pressing.
You're not paying attention. The Mishnah said, if you have a Yisrael who is going to end up pressing his grapes to the tumah, you harvesting with him is helping him to eventually do an aveira. You are mistayeya yidei ozer aveira because you're helping him to be over on this issue of making chulin and Eretz Yisrael tamei, or making tevel, which contains truma, tamei, and therefore you're not allowed to do that. If it was a goy, it wouldn't be a problem, because a goy is not mitzvah on such things. Or no, a goy actually said you're not allowed to harvest with him because you are directly helping in the process of making it tamei, whereas when it comes to the pressing, that you're allowed to do, because by the time you join in the pressing, it's already tamei and it's too late. So anyway, similarly with the baker over here, so you're loshin v'lo'erchin, you're not allowed to knead the dough or shape it together with him. Avam v'lichin, you may pass the palter, but you are allowed to help him take the bread to the palter, to the actual baker who's going to bake it, because the same thing by that time it's already tossed. Tosfos learns differently. The palter is not the baker. Tosfos learns that the palter is the one who actually goes and sells it. So therefore, in other words, according to Tosfos, you would not allow to help this guy, the yid, bake the bread. Because according to Tosfos, the baking is still considered part of the same process that involves making it tamei. So therefore, the only thing you can do is you can help him bring, once baked already, then you can help him bring it to the wholesaler, or the palter, or the retailer, or whatever. The one who's actually going to be selling. The reason, why, for example, can't you shape the bread with him on the face of it? Why is shaping the bread considered part of the process? Because already told me as soon as you put the flour and the water together, the Meiri says a practical thing, because sometimes when you're kneading and shaping the dough, you realize it's too soft or too hard or whatever, and you need to add more flour or you need to add more water, therefore you have more flour that now you're helping to make tamei, which you can't do. Okay. So, the Gemara says.
So you're making the extra flour.
Okay, Amar Avuna. Yayin, when you have wine that's being pressed from the grapes, kivin shehitkali moshech, as soon as it starts flowing, again, remember the gas where they press the grapes is built on a slant, so therefore when it's flowing from the top side where the grapes are being pressed to the bottom side, oisa yayin nesach, at that point it's able to become yayin nesach, if the goy touches it. So the question is, how does that fit in our Mishnah? Tanan, we learned in our Mishnah, we said you're allowed to buy an already trodden mass of grapes from a guy, and even if it's not just his feet, even if he's actually taking with his hands and taking some of the loose grapes that are lying on the side. Right, and he's putting them back into the tapuach. Now, how does that fit with what Rav Huna is saying? The answer is, Omar Rav Huna, but gas kuko malaya. Yes, but our Mishnah is talking about where the gas is stoppered. So you have, there's a stopper has been put into the pipe over there that leads down to the burr. So therefore, what happens is now, when the grapes are being pressed in the gas, no wine is flowing because it has no place to flow to. You have a stopper, you have again, you have the gas, you have the pipe, and then you have the burr. So at the top of the thinner, you put in a stopper over there, therefore the wine's not going anywhere, right? So that would be then, that would be the case when the Mishnah is saying that it can't be Yayin Nesef yet. But if it's open and it's able to flow, then no, as soon as it flows, the fact that it's starting to flow as a result of the Goy's actions would make it Yayin Nesef.
You mean the Goy would open the stopper?
No, never mind if he opened the stopper. If there was no stopper there in the first place, for example, as soon as he starts treading the grape and the wine starts, and the grape and the juice starts flowing right away, then it can become Yayin Nesef. You have Tosfos talks about over here at great length. You can see over here, long Tosfos over here that talks about a few different possibilities of what exactly it means, Kivin Shehis Kali Moshes, and you have other Rishonim also that talk about, does it mean, for example, Tosfos mentions, and this is brought Lahalacha in Shulchan Aruch, that what's needed in order for it to be considered wine is when you press grapes, you have all the peels and all the grape flesh and whatever that's mixed in with the juice over there. It's all like a slurry kind of. When you move all that aside so that the juice can go all the way down to the bottom of the gas so that the juice can flow freely, that's what means given shehis kali moshek. So only then can it become yayin nesef. As long as it's all like a mush over there mixed in with the pieces of grape and whatever, then it still wouldn't be considered yayin nesef yet, even if it is moving around. Okay. Toshma. Come, let's bring a proof. The Mishnah continues. The Mishnah had said that it doesn't become Yayin Nesach until it actually goes down into the burr. So again, what is Rav Huna doing with that if he's saying that as soon as it starts flowing? The answer is, again, Rav Huna can answer the same way, that the Mishnah is still talking about a gas, not only is kukur, not only it's stoppered, but also malaya, it's already full. It's already full of juice, so the juice that's newly being pressed out of the grapes has nowhere else to go. If it wasn't malaya, then it could still flow from the top end to the bottom end within the gas itself. That would still be a problem. If it was not kukur, then it would be flowing through the thinner, and that would also be a problem. Like this is stoppered and it's full, so therefore the juice has no place to flow from uphill because downhill was already full. It's already full and it's stoppered, so it's not going any further than downhill. Yeah.
So in that case,
that is when Rav Huna is saying, that's when the Mishnah would say that it's not Yayin Nesach until it goes down to the burr. But otherwise, if either of those conditions didn't exist, then it would be Yayin Nesach even when it's still in the gas, even when it's still in the top part. Okay. However, Toshma, Yoda Labur, but let's continue. The Mishnah had said, once the wine goes down into the pit, Mashaba Burr also Vashar Mutter, whatever is in the pit is also if the goy touches it, and everything else is mutter. So there you clearly see that even what's still on the top part is mutter, even though it's flowing down into the burr, whereas Rav Huna is saying not. How does that work? The answer is Amar Rav Huna, like Kasha, kind of Mishnah Rishonah, kind of Mishnah Achronah. We're actually talking two different versions of the Mishnah. There were two periods in Halacha. Originally, they held one way, which is how it was written in our Mishnah. Later on, the Chachamim decided a different way, and that became Mishnah Achronah, which is in a Braisa. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, Barishonah Hayomim, and the Gemara interjects with a Simin, Badad. Originally, they used to say the following three Dinim, which are reflected in our Mishnah. Number one, in both Tzurim of Kachav Magas. Number one, you're not allowed to harvest grapes together with a Goy, where they're going to be taken to be pressed in the gas. Because you're not allowed to do anything that leads towards chulin and outstral becoming tamei, and harvesting together with him would be one of those things. But the first dalit is avol derchim ima over the chavim v'gas. V'ein derchim im yisrael sh'ot peres b'tumah. Number two, you're not allowed to press grapes together with a yid who processes his peres b'tumah, which he's not allowed to do. So also, let's say, yeah, the over avera, because you're not allowed to help out somebody who's doing an avera. So the goy, for him, it wouldn't be an avera, because he's not in the silver voice, but for him, there's a problem of ligrim tumma. For the yid, it's not only to be goyim tumma, it's that you're helping him do an avera.
The yid.
And number three, avol derchim, the second dalit is you're allowed to press the grapes together with the goy in the gas, meaning v'lechashin in l'drav Huna. So according to that Mishnah Rishonah, then we're not concerned about Rav Huna's point. We don't care about the status of the wine in the gas. because it's not considered wine yet, only when it goes down into the bur. But then, because you're loyma davad, or davad really, it's supposed to be, then the chachamim changed their mind and decided these three halachas differently. Number one, ein dochinim over gachavim bagas. You're not allowed to press wine together with the goy in the gas. And the reason is mishum de Rav Huna, because of Rav Huna's issue, because once it's pressed and it starts flowing, even if it's still only in the gas, even if it hasn't flowed down into the sinner yet, it can already be considered wine once it starts flowing. They boitzer in Yisrael shal oitzer peiros b'truma. Number two is that you're not allowed to harvest grapes together with a Yisrael who processes his grapes for truma, because again, you're helping to cause truma. Now there, you don't have an issue on the v'chosha can change dochen. How much more so you're not allowed to press them together with him. Now here, the issue is not that you're not allowed to make chulin and out Yisrael tome. The Tana of this Mishnah Achrona holds you are. The problem is, again, like we said before, the difference is between a yid produce and a goy, is a yid has truma and meiser has to be taken out of it. Therefore, you're not allowed to, because you're making tome in advance the truma that is eventually going to be taken out of it.
Because he's
doing it for truma. Yes. And v'chosha can change dochen, and how much more so you're not allowed to press the grapes with them, because the pressing is when the actual truma takes place, on a d'oraisa level. However, you are allowed to harvest together with a goy when it's going to be put in the fat, when it's going to be taken to the gas and pressed, unlike the Mishnah Rishona, Shemutu Ligrim Tuma Lachulin Shemayot Yisrael, because the bottom line halacha is you are allowed to allow chulin in Eretz Yisrael when there's no issue of truma and meiser to become tamei.
As opposed to
the Mishnah Rishona, right? So Rav Huna is talking according to the Mishnah Achrona. So the Chassam Sofer asked an interesting thing. The halacha is like the second one, therefore. So therefore, the halacha is for the most part not like our Mishnah. You are not, so therefore, the halacha is like this Mishnah Achrona. You're not allowed to press together with a goy, because as soon as the goy starts the pressing, it becomes Yain Netzach, as soon as grape juice starts flowing, and therefore you're helping him with something, therefore you're gaining from something that's also, because you're getting paid for your work over there, and therefore you're gaining from the existence of Yain Netzach. Which again, as we'll talk in the next paddock, you're not allowed to do. So you are allowed to harvest with them, on the other hand. Again, not like our Mishnah said.
Assume that it's Netzach. I mean, it's not really Netzach.
Once a goy is involved, it becomes Yain Netzach. That's what we're going to discuss later. We're going to discuss later what parts of his body he has to touch it with. But the initial assumption we have is even if he's only treading it with his hand, he may still, first of all, there's a possibility maybe with his feet he can make it Netzach. We're going to discuss that later. But also, he may also reach down and pick some of it up with his hand, and therefore do what's called in the Gemara later shichshuch, like he moves it around, midoraisa is only if he actually did nisuch, only if we know he actually picked up some of the wine and poured it as a libation for Abed Adonai. We're talking about it in midrabanan, and we talked earlier in the sechta, when we started discussing yain nesach, there are two reasons why yain nesach is also. One is because of the gzera, they may have done nisuch with it, which is again going to be the shichshuch thing that we're going to talk about. He may like swirl around the wine a little bit as a symbolic thing for Abed Adonai. And number two, there's the issue that because of chasmus, because you don't want too much social interaction between Jews and goyim, which can lead to intermarriage. There's a number we're going to see as we go through the Gemara. We're going to see there's a number of cases where we don't have both of those factors. For example, there's going to be a big difference between, so far here we're talking about the wine belongs to the goy. There you have both issues. On the other hand, later on, we're going to talk about, for example, what if the wine belongs to a yid and a goy is just helping out with it, or is an employee or whatever. There you don't really have the issue of chasmus so much, but you do have the issue of, not so much, because you're wine after all, but you do have the issue of nisuch. You do have the possibility of nisuch. So that's one of those things. Okay, but anyway, Sam Sofer asked an interesting question. He says, how does it come about that you have, I mean, a kotel like this, that they change their mind? First they said you're not allowed to allow chulim to become tamei, but the wine in the top part is not considered yain nezach, and then they flipped it around. He says what it is they always knew that the halacha is you're not allowed to harvest grapes together with a goy. Originally they figured that it can't be because originally they figured, well, why shouldn't you be allowed to harvest with him? Must be because also Lugrim Tuma Lachulin. Therefore, fine, we can still say the fact is you're allowed to press with him because it's not considered wine yet. Later on, the Chachamim realized, no, the real reason why you're not allowed to harvest with him, the halacha was always known. It was always known in both cases that you're not in both cases it was known, sorry, that you're not allowed to help a yid press grapes when it's done the truma. So originally the thought was that it's because also ligrim tumah l'cholin. Later on they realized it's not because of math. You're allowed to allow cholin to become tumah. The reason rather was because, because it becomes yain netzach already at the top part. No, so we are talking about with a goy. No, so the halacha was always, no, that's, I'm confusing myself. The Chassam Sofer says then that, yeah, the halacha was always known that there are restrictions what you're allowed and not allowed to do with the goy. Originally, they thought the reason for those restrictions is because of the cholin problem. In that case, necessarily it means that as long as it's in the gas, it's not an issue of yain netzach, and therefore the only reason is the cholin problem. Later on, they realize you're allowed to make cholin tameh of necessity. Therefore, if the halacha still is, if there's still things that are to do with the goy, it must be because of yain netzach. So that's how they came to flip it around.
Actually, it was always.
Initially, they always knew the halacha. They always knew the halacha, but they thought originally the reason for the halacha must be because of the cholin problem. And later on, they realized because of the ayin netzach problem.
And if it's the ayin netzach problem, then you have to flip everything.
Then you have to flip everything around. Exactly right. Now, we said in the Mishnah, we said that it doesn't become yain netzach until it goes down into the pit. Again, we said before, that's only according to Mishnah Rishonah, that's not the halacha. However, the question is, but we learn, I have a contradiction, because we learn in a Mishnah in Maestris, at what point does wine become chayav in Maestris, which is at what point is the processing of it finished, when is my halacha, yain mishnah. Yayin mishayikpe. Wine only becomes chayv and meister when yikpe, when the seeds and whatnot float to the top after it's in the bur. So what are you telling me in the Mishnah that as soon as it gets into the bur, it can be considered yayin netzach? If we see from that, you need another process after it. After it's in the bur, it settles for a while, and eventually stuff starts floating to the top, and that's when it becomes chayv and meister. Why are we saying yayin netzach is any different? Yeah. The answer is, it's not a contradiction because one Mishnah is going according to the Rakiva and the other one is going to the Rabbanim, Our Mishnah goes according to the Rabbanim and the Mishnah in Maestris goes according to the Rakiva. The Tanan or Tanya, Yayin Mishayer Labur, we learn in a Braisa that when there's wine chayav in Maestris, the Tanakama of that Braisa says as soon as it comes into the Bur, which is similar to our Mishnah, that at that point it can become Yayin Netzach. Rabbi Akiva says once the stuff floats to the top.
So the wine flows into the Bur,
it sits there, it starts fermenting, and then it starts floating to the top. Right.
So Rabbi Akiva says,
once the stuff starts floating to the top, that's when it becomes chayav and meister. And he would also say, presumably, that only then can it become yayin netzach. Only then is it considered full-fledged wine.
So why is that?
Because he says that's a major stage in the processing of the wine. When you have all the stuff that floats to the top and you skim it, and some of the Mephoshim say actually it doesn't mean so much when it floats to the top, it means more, some of the Mephoshim say it means when you skim it all. But whatever, according to Rabbi Akiva, only at that point has it fully become wine. But that's just because as long as it's fermenting.
Fermentation,
at that point, it's probably finished fermenting. Yeah.
Okay. But before it's great, it's grape juice, really.
Yeah, I guess. Okay. Okay, he boiled them. So now we have a question.
And
the Chacham said that not as soon as it lands in the bur, which is like we said in our mission. So Iboyalahu, so now we have a question. When we say Yayin Mishayifteh, now again, there's two places where you can have this Yifteh, where the stuff floats to the top. Kipui means when it floats. Iboyalahu, Kipui Debur or Kipui Dechavis? Do we mean the time when it floats, when it floats to the top in the bur, or do we mean later on? Or later on when it's in the barrel, because again, you take it out of the bur, and later on you pour it into barrels, and there also it sits in the barrels for a while, it finishes fermenting in the barrels, eventually more stuff floats to the top, and again, you skim it off also. So which pipui is Rabbi Akiva talking about that he says that it's... We don't know that. That's the question. Maybe Rabbi Akiva would hold that the processing of the wine is not finished until it was in the bur. Some of the stuff floated to the top and skimmed it off. Then you poured it into barrels. Then more stuff floated to the top. Only then Rabbi Akiva would say, yeah. So Toshma, the Tanya, come, we'll prove from a braisa that says as follows, Yayin Mishayikbe, wine becomes chayev in Meister once Shayikbe, once the stuff floats to the top, but Afa Pisha Kofa, but even once it floated to the top, nevertheless, it's still not fully chayev in Meister. Kolet Minagat El Yona, you're allowed to catch some wine that's flowing in the upper gas, in the upper, in the place where the grapes were trodden, or minasinor, or from the pipe that connects them, the shoten, you're allowed to drink that. In other words, what's in the bird is already chayav and maaser, because it was already shiur. But what's still in the gas, and what's still flowing down into there, is not yet chayav and maaser.
And who says that?
And Braisa says that. So shmamin of people with the berachamin. Therefore, obviously, when we say, when we're talking about dayin mishiyikba, Rav Akiva and mishiyikba, obviously we mean that when the what happens when it's in the ber, because we're saying that because the point is, if we were talking about that we have to wait only when it's in the barrels and stuff floats to the top of the barrels, only then it's chayav and maaser, why is it relevant to talk about the gas and the sinner anymore? The barrels are nowhere near the gas and the sinner. The ber is connected to them, therefore we must be talking about the ber.
Regardless, therefore, once
it's in the burr, and according to the Tanakhama, as soon as it lands in the burr, and according to the Akiva, Mishiyakta, once the stuff floats to the top, then it becomes wine, and then it becomes chayav and maaser. Okay. Shlomiya. Now, actually, by the way, I mean, usually you would think to say, Rabbi Akiva against the Chachamim, the Halacha has to be like the Chachamim. However, in this particular case, you have a Gemara in Bava Metzia that bears on this. Tosfos mentions this Gemara over there. That discusses at what point do things become chayav and maaser. And there, the Gemara actually there in Bava Metzia. Yeah. So there, and the Gemara there follows, and the Gemara there, the sugya of the Gemara, the discussion over there follows Rabbi Akiva's opinion. So therefore, that ends up being the halacha. That Mishiyakta only wants the flotation or the giving. Because we talked about it in connection with when things become chayav and maaser, and therefore at what point are workers allowed to eat from it, and at what point are animals allowed to eat from it, etc. So therefore the halacha ends up being in this case, like Rabbi Akiva, that only once it landed in the barrels and the skinning was done, only then is it chayav and maaser. Before that point, you'd still be allowed to drink.
Skimming in the bar.
Yeah, not the skimming in the bar, but rather, yeah. Okay. Fine. Okay, so the question is, so far what are you telling me? Our Mishnah that says just as soon as it goes into the bur is according to the Chachamim. The Mishnah in Maestris over there that mentions Mishiyikta is a Mishnah in Maestris, and then we have a Braisa that we have a Mishnah that says Yain Mishiyikta, and the Braisa explains that that's the opinion of Rebbe Akiva. So you're telling me so far, all Mishnah goes according to the Chachamim over there. The Mishnah in Maestris goes according to the Bakibra. That, as soon as she yikbe, as soon as the stuff floats to the top, then it's already chayav and maaser. But Hatoni Rav Zvid b'dvei Rav Oshia. But we have a braita that Rav Zvid said from the yeshiva of Rav Oshia. Yayin mishayod labor v'yikbe. Wine becomes chayav and maaser once it reaches the bur and yikbe. Rav Akiva imi mishayish labachavias. And Rav Akiva says, that you need a fruit of the thing. It needs to be drawn out of the burr and put in barrels. So you said before, Rabbi Akiva says mishiyikpe, and we said that shiyikpe over there means, and we said that mikta shiyikpe means kipui the burr before it's even placed in barrels. But we have a braita of Zvid that says that there needs a next stage that is put in the chavis. The answer is tautanami lahach kamaisach. You're right. Change the wording of the first braita also to match that. Yayin mishiyod lebur v'yikta. That wine is chayav and maaser according to the Tanakhama once it reaches the burr and the stuff floats to the top. Rabbi Akiva and the mishiyish lebachavias. Rabbi Akiva says once it's drawn out from there and placed in barrels. And then Rambam. Rashi learns that shiyishle just means that it's ladled out of the burr and put into barrels. According to Rashi's explanation, right at that point, it would be chayav and maaser.
Not in the barrel
that it floats up. The Rambam, though, understands Mishiyishla as being that you skim it off in the chavis, and therefore he understands that it's more than yikbeh, means that you actually have to skim it off. Therefore, according to the Rambam, since the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva, as we're saying over here, the way the Rambam understands it, yes. Yeah. So therefore, when is it chayav and maaser? Only after it, so it was in the burr, stuff floated to the top and was skimmed off. Right. Then it was placed into barrels, more stuff floated to the top and it's skimmed off. Then it becomes chayav and maaser.
So the complete process, basically.
Yeah. Okay. So now the question is, okay, so going back to our Mishnah, the Elamach Nissen to Katani Eina Osi Yain Nessa Hachiyer Labur. Fine, so let's get back to our Mishnah then. We said, we had the opinion in our Mishnah that said that it only becomes Yain Nessa when it lands in the Bur. Lema Tlosa Tanoi. Should we have to say that it's actually a three-way machloikis? So now it comes out. So now we have the Chacham, one second, we have the Chacham, we have the Tana of our Mishnah who says once it lands in the Bur, we have, now that we change the wording of the Braisa, then we have the first Tana in that Braisa who says it has to be after it lands in the Bur and stuff floats to the top. And then we have Rabbi Akiva after that, also Mishad Yishla, once it's placed in barrels. Should we have to say it's a three-way machloikas?
We would say as Tana when it lands in the
Bur. The Chachamim of that
and
the stuff floats to the top. And Rabbi Akiva, and when it's placed in barrels.
And it floats.
Yeah. Should we have to say that? We could if we have to say that there's three opinions, but we would rather not. We'd rather be able to say that there's as few opinions as possible. So if we left the Braisa according to its original wording, then we only have two opinions. We have Mishayered Labur is the same as the Yered Labur of our Mishnah. Rabbi Akiva adds Mishayisra, and then you only have two opinions. Okay, the answer, so the answer is loy. No, you don't have to say there's three opinions. Shiny, Yain Nesach Tachmir Rabbanon. It's different with Yain Nesach Tachmir or extra Machmir there. So when it comes to Meiser, the Tana of our Mishnah would
say things.
So therefore, in other words, the Tana of our Mishnah would say, when it comes to Meiser, it doesn't become Chayav and Meiser as soon as it lands in the Bur. It has to either stuff up the float to the top, once it's in the Bur, in other words, fermentation is finished, or it has to be placed into barrels. The Tana of our Mishnah is not taking a stand. But as far as Yain Nesach, the Tana of our Mishnah says you have to be Machmir. As soon as it lands in the Bur, it can already become Yain Nesach. So therefore, you only have two opinions when it comes to Meiser.
Yeah. So the Chachamim and the Tana of our Mishnah seems to be...
Therefore, the Tana of our Mishnah isn't necessarily taking a position about as far as Maaseh. He's saying when it comes to Yain Nesach, as soon as it lands in the Bur. When it comes to Maaseh, it'll be at some later stage.
It's not a three-way discussion.
Because the Tana of the Tanoim there in Maaseh are not referring to Yain Nesach, and the Tana of our Mishnah is not referring to Maaseh. So therefore, when it comes to Yain Nesach, the Tana of our Mishnah will say as soon as it lands in the Bur, and therefore we don't have to say anymore that our Mishnah goes only according to one of those Tanoim. It could go according to either one or the other. So the Chachamim can say, in other words, either the Tana of our Mishnah can be like a Chachamim when it comes to Meiser, or he can be like Rabbi Akiva when it comes to Meiser. When it comes to Meiser, you have a two-way machlokes as far as Meiser. No, so when it comes to Yain Nesach, yeah, so he can hold, no. Again, the Tana of our Mishnah is making a statement as far as Yain Nesach. He's not making any statement about as far as Maaseh. So as far as Maaseh, he can hold that as far as Maaseh, once it lands in the Bur, it's not yet higher than Maaseh. Either it has to be Mishayitzeh or Mishayishla, according to the Tanaka, according to the Chachamim, or according to the Rabbi Akiva. So you only have a two-way machlokes.
Basically, to put it clear, only in the case of Yain Nesach, the Tana of our Mishnah says when it lands in the Bur.
Now, what about according to Rava? Rava was the one who brought up the point before that on the one hand we have our Mishnah about Yain Nesach, and on the other hand we have the Mishnah about Meiser. So evidently he held that they should be equated. Well, then necessarily, Mukum Leva Tlosa Tanoi. Okay, of necessity, Rava will have to say that there's a three-way machlokes.
How did he reconcile?
So he will say, okay, you have to have a three-way machlokes, you have to have a three-way machlokes. It happens. It's not common, but it does happen. Tosfos points out, by the way, it's not that you really have four opinions, because you also have the Mishnah Achrona before, that it becomes Yain Nesach even before it lands in the Bur while still in the gas, because, after all, the Tana of the Mishnah Rishona and the Tana of the Mishnah Achrona are all, it's still the same opinion, it's just he changed his mind. So you can't really call it, it's a different version, it's not a four-way Machlokes, right?
But it's still,
Tosfos uses the expression, Mishnah Achronin Nami, his Chalim Moshech, Kovel HaMaiser. Yeah, he would hold that just like when it starts flowing, it becomes higher, it becomes also as Yain Nesach, the Goy touches it. The same way, as soon as it begins flowing, it's Kavua as far as Meiser, and you can't drink from it anymore before you take Turma and Meiser. So therefore, it's not really a separate opinion, it's just a restatement of the original opinion. We said in the Mishnah Mashiba, Bur also Vashan Mutter. We said whatever's in the Bur becomes Osir, because again, the Tana of our Mishnah was the Mishnah Rishoyna, that said that only when the wine is in the Bur does it become Osir as Yain Nesach, not before that. Vashan Mutter, the rest is Mutter, meaning what's still in the gas and what's still flowing down in the simmer. However, Amar Rav Huna, Loishanu Elashala Hechtiv Gargusni Lagas. However, that only applies if you didn't take the Gargusni, which is the filter that we talked about before. Gargusni means a basket. You have a basket tied to the bottom end of the tinner. So like this, when the wine flows out of the tinner, it has to pass through that basket first. And that way it's filtered of some of the stuff that's in it. So now it can happen sometimes. So the Gargusni in the basket. So if you didn't take that basket and pour the contents of it back into the gas, it's a filter. But sometimes what you would do is you would take that filter and you would pour the contents of it back into the gas up on top. And the reason you would do that is that way more wine can come out of it. And there is some wine, after all, stuck in there together with all the solids. So you might pour it back into the gas. And that way more pressing can be done and that way more actual wine can come out of it.
So
if you didn't do that, then you're fine. Aval hefter gargusni lagas, but if you took the gargusni and poured the contents of it back into the gas, it's a filter. No, it's a big basket that's used as a filter. So if you, okay. So if you took the gargusni and poured the contents back into the gas, then it would be also what's in the gas would be also. In other words, again, you had a guy touch what was in the burr, you had the gargusni there next to it. Therefore, what's in the gargusni becomes osir.
So he
touched what was in the burr. That's what the Gemara is going to say. The Gemara is going to ask why what's in the gargusni is osir. Wait, but that's what we're going to say. Take it as a given, and we'll explain in a second why.
Okay.
That what's in the gargusni becomes osir.
Gargusni is not really on the burr.
That's what we're going to discuss. Wait, but therefore, what happens is now you pour the contents of that into the gas, so now what's in the gas becomes osir. Okay, Tosfos actually talks about it may not be so simple. Maybe it can be bottled. There may be different opinions whether it can be bottled or not. Okay, anyway. Okay, so the question is, gargusni gufo b'maikom mitzra. Find it. How is the gargusni itself becoming osir in the first place? B'nitzik, obviously because wine is flowing from it into the burr. Because what happens, again, the gargusni is a filter. There's a connection. In other words, you have the gargusni is here at the bottom of the tinner. Wine is flowing into the gargusni from the tinner. Now you have, from the gargusni, it's flowing into the burr. So therefore, there's a connection between the gargusni and the burr.
Reverse.
Right. The problem with that is, shmamin on nitzit chibur. Does that mean to imply that things that are connected by a column of liquid are considered connected? That we discussed that before. But, and actually, later on in the next perek, Rav Huna starts by saying exactly that. However, Tosfos says, the thing is, Rav Huna himself changed his mind there. So therefore, we shouldn't say that he still holds that way over here. That nitzik is not chibur. That nitzik is not a chibur. So then in that case, why is he saying over here that the gargusni should be altered?
It was said before he changed his mind?
No. The answer is, Kedetoni Rav Chiya Shepchatus Lachitu, the same way as Rav Chiya says in the next parak, in connection with a case when you're pouring wine through a funnel, where we say in some cases the wine that's in the funnel becomes also bahar, and why would, and actually make the wine in the upper container also, what would be the case if the bottom of the funnel is actually going into the liquid in the bottom container? You're pouring,
not
if it's, in other words, yes, but yeah, it's Shepchatus, it's banging against like the liquid in the bottom container. Hachinami Shepchatus Bordoi, the same thing over here. Here, you could have a case where the gargusni, where the burr is so full that it's actually overflowing the bottom of the gargusni. Therefore, it's not even a question of nitzik, it's actually touching the gargusni. When it doesn't, then you could argue maybe nitzik is not enough to be a chiddush. I want.